The man raised by wolves was disappointed. He'd tried a new murder technique, but it hadn't been the same. Oh, it had done the job all right. Hadn't he left his prey lying in a lovely pool of blood? The problem was, he had, by necessity, been too far away, which had left the killing feeling too remote. Although he had no intention of ever getting caught, the man raised by wolves had begun to feel that something was missing. He wasn't receiving the pleasure he usually did from taking a life. Strangely, even slashing pretty Erin Gallagher's throat hadn't been nearly as exciting as he'd hoped. In fact, it had been the first time since he'd killed Snowball, the unlucky kitten, that he'd been able to wait until he got home from the hunt to satisfy the throbbing erection that had always come with killing. Of course, the stone-cold bitch of a mother didn't count. That kill had been for utility, and a well-deserved punishment, after all.
I always believed in the golden rule. It made sense that if you did unto others as you would have them do unto you, everybody ought to be happy. There was just one flaw, and it took me a while, years, to figure it out. Other people often wanted something different done unto them than I did. Unless I knew what they wanted, it didn't matter how nicely I smiled or whether I said please and thank you. They still viewed me as an outsider, a well-intentioned lame-o, or a mark. But if I knew what they wanted, what they specifically needed in order to feel as if I understood them and was one of them, ah, the power! And it was even better when I knew the things that irritated them, so I could avoid saying or doing those things. With that knowledge, the golden rule was elevated from a feeble plea to a magical incantation. It was the golden rule on steroids.
It was a toffee-colored sedan with vinyl seats. There was an AM radio with chrome buttons and on the ledge over the back seat, a box of Kleenex and an ice scraper. Mrs. Sen told Elliot she didn't feel right leaving him alone in the apartment, but Elliot knew she wanted him sitting beside her because she was afraid. She dreaded the roar of the ignition and placed her hands over her ears to block out the sound as she pressed her slippered feet to the gas, revving the engine. Mr. Sen says that once I receive my license, everything will improve. What do you think, Elliot? Will things improve? You could go places, Elliot suggested. You could go anywhere. Could I drive all the way to Calcutta? How long would that take, Elliot? 10,000 miles at 50 miles per hour. Elliot could not do the math in his head. He watched Mrs. Sen adjust the driver's seat, the rearview mirror, the sunglasses on top of her head. She tuned the radio to a station that played symphonies. "Is it Beethoven?" she asked once, pronouncing the first part of the composer's name not Bay, but Bee, like the insect. She rolled down the window on her side and asked Elliot to do the same. Eventually, she pressed her foot to the brake pedal, manipulated the automatic gear shift as if it were an enormous leaky pen, and backed inch by inch out of the parking space.
The man's eyes were like crystalline windows that reflected their light into the dark corners of Jack's soul. It was impossible to run, impossible to hide.
"Silence is brother to lies," the old man said. "The truth is sister to mercy."
He lifted his other hand, cradling Jack's head between dry palms.
"This time, say the words you've been given to say. Do the deeds you've been given to do. This time, hear me and obey. Thus saith the Lord."
The preacher ruffled Jack's hair and trotted back to the decrepit easy chair. Finished with her call and having witnessed the tail end of the homegrown prophecy, Yvonne hurried out of the garage.
"Sorry about that," she said. "Ignore him, hun."
Snatches of her father's message buzzed in Jack's mind like static as he headed for his car.